Anya crept through tall grass. Along with Billy, Snake, and a gangly Cheyenne kid named Cody Hawk, she was circling to the south of the abandoned adobe ranch house where George Abell and his crazy dogs were holed up with a captive Sally Ten Bears, they hoped. Anya carried a Ruger Mini 14, a handy, reliable carbine that fired the same .223 caliber cartridge as the M16. She knew a shotgun usually served better for close-in work, but there was a major prospect they'd have to shoot it out with the hostage takers before busting into the house. She preferred something she could shoot accurately at range. Anyway, for infighting, she carried the borrowed Glock, and she always had the sword, of course. Snake carried a Mossberg 500 combat-style shotgun in 20-gauge. When Anya cocked an eyebrow at her, choosing that over the more conventional 12-gauge, the tall, tattooed woman shrugged and smiled.
3/4 the killing power for 2/3 the recoil. I like the trade-off.
Billy and Cody Hawk both carried lever-action carbines chambered in .44 Magnum. Billy claimed those served as well as a semi-auto rifle like the Mini 14, even in close-quarters battle. And while the needle-like .223s had a lot of penetration, the big blunt Magnum had torque. Like Anya, the three Iron Horse people carried holstered handguns as well as long arms. They rode horseback as close as they could get to their objective without being seen. Anya decided she wasn't surprised that her biker buddies knew how to ride flesh-and-blood horses as well as iron ones. It fit perfectly with their philosophy of combining the best of the old with the best of the new. When they rode as far as they were going to, they dismounted. 4 of the elder warriors stayed to tend their young horse herd well behind the line of fire. The other 4 went to position themselves under cover. They would provide long-range fire support for the younger people assaulting the ranch buildings.
You wouldn't think some of them would make it across the room. They move like mist out here in the weeds.
Don't underestimate your elders, cub.
They gave the old boys 10 minutes. For Anya, it was like squatting in boiling water, trying to contain her eagerness and awareness that the clock was running. Then they split themselves into 3 teams and moved out. The lone road to the Otero place ran up and over a low ridge from the west. Anya's group intended to take up a station on the far side, covering the back of the house from the cover of dry Rabbit Run wash. They had the farthest to go. Johnny's quartet would approach from north of the drive, his father's from the south. The 3 parties were positioning themselves in an approximate equilateral triangle to allow them to catch their opponents from flank and rear while minimizing the danger they'd crossfire one another. Anya fretted about how willing Iron Horse bikers would be to put themselves under the command of a cop, much less their beloved chieftain's until recently estranged father. But Tom's team, Angel and Ricky, plus a Kiowa named Satanta, seemed to respect the older man. It's all going so smoothly, Anya thought as she duck-walked along with carbine in hand. That's what worries me. When they had reached a point Anya reckoned was due south of the house, she held up a hand to halt.
Let's take a look. Get our bearings.
The others nodded. Even more than concern over Tom's reception, Anya felt trepidation about how Snake would respond to being effectively under her command. But Snake just kept acting with her usual cool matter-of-factness. The running fight with the stolen tanker seemed to have won her respect. They went to their bellies. The earth was cool beneath Anya. She wore a light jacket over jeans and hiking boots. Working her way to the top of a low rise, she peered through the yellow wraparound lenses of a pair of shooting glasses. Despite being built of stabilized mud brick, the main house looked like a conventional contemporary ranch design. Maybe a 3-bedroom. It still had glass in the windows. Anya guessed it couldn't have laid derelict that long. Of course, out in the middle of nowhere, untended window glass might have a greater life expectancy than, say, back home in Brooklyn. A maroon SUV was parked in front of the ranch house. To the west lay a garage and a small prefab building that might have been a shed or a workshop. Past a corner of the house, Anya glimpsed a small barn made of poles and sheet tin.
All right. We're on the right track. We better move.
Once they reached their attack positions, they'd use a mirror to flash quick signals to the other 2 groups. Snake caught her forearm in an unsettlingly hard grip.
Wait. What's going on over there?
She pointed off to the northwest. Anya saw a commotion in the tall grass. A heartbeat later, Johnny Ten Bears rolled into sight, grappling for his life against a bulky, bare-chested Georgia Belle. A knife flashed in the crazy dog chieftain's hand.
Freeze where you are!
Anya was already in motion upward with no ready way to stop. She also knew that people who were talking usually didn't shoot. It took time, and generally an act of will, to shift state from talk to shoot. So she took a calculated risk and turned. Of course, she anticipated a loud noise and shattering impact and blinding white light for every millisecond of the movement. Anya already knew what she'd see. Three stocky guys in Old West Indian reenactor drag pointed thoroughly modern assault weapons at them. The dogs didn't bother blacking their faces anymore. They were out in the open, as it were. Instead, they had painted themselves with various symbols in assorted colors. They wore buckskin pants, bone bead chest pieces, and eagle feathers. She gave points to the guy who went shirtless. The air was cool. The relentless Great Plains wind turned it into knives.
Way to walk into the trap.
The crazy dogs were all keyed up on adrenaline. From the looks in their eyes, they had been for days. Anya's comrades stood and turned to face the men who had the drop on them. They held their long arms loose in their hands, muzzles angled down.
Throw down your weapons.
Gunfire broke out to the west, but the diversion was a welcome assistance to what she was about to do anyway. Three sets of dog soldiers' eyes turned to the sound of shooting. Anya leapt into motion. The sword sprang into her hand. Anya slashed at the middle man. She whirled right. Cutting the man on that side across the chest as he raised his rifle.
I'm dead.
It took little time to realize that wasn't the case. She wheeled, sword still in hand. Its miraculous blade gleamed in the sun. She caught an impression of the third dog gunman falling, dropping his M4 carbine. Anya turned to find Snake and Billy in Weaver combat stances, staring over the front sights of their respective handguns. Snake still stood with her own rifle in hand. Her dark eyes were wide.
Whoa.
Anya realized the other two, having dropped their long arms and with handguns still braced and leveled at the air their opponents had occupied moments before, had clicked their eyes to her.
Later. First, survive until later.
A brisk firefight continued to the west of the main house. Despite getting ambushed by the crazy dogs, the other two parties were making a fight of it.
Johnny!
Anya stepped hard on the thought.
So much for the feds being smart enough to kill the SIU's passwords.
Snake relaxed out of firing position. She ejected the 1911's partially depleted magazine onto her palm, tucked it away beneath her bulky army jacket, before popping a fresh one into the well. Meanwhile, Billy was ejecting the full moon clip from his big revolver and reloading too. Anya recovered her fallen Mini 14. She jacked back the charging handle far enough to confirm a round was still chambered. Gunfire was coming from the house now as well. Through a sudden wave of nausea, Anya turned to one of the young Iron Horsemen.
Watch our tails for us. We don't want any more bad guys sneaking up on us like that. You got that?
He nodded feverishly, firmed up his grip on his lever action, and started sweeping the surrounding grass with wild eyes. Anya went to a knee and peered up and over the low crest. She felt Snake and Billy slide up on either side of her. For the moment, the battle had devolved into a static firefight. The horses had gone to ground and traded shots with dogs firing from behind the outbuildings and the SUV. Anya had no idea how any of her friends had survived being cut down or captured. They had walked into traps as flat-footed as Anya and her team. She heard a strangled scream, saw a dog who had spun back behind the garage reach up to the red spurting gape where his jaw should have been.
The old guy snipers. They're picking off the dogs.
Anya could see no sign of Johnny and his burlier foe. She didn't know if that was a good sign or not. She never thought for a moment either side would pack it in just because a leader fell.
Don't forget, the choppers are on their way.
And that's not a good thing.
One thing to do.
Of course.
Damn straight.
Cody, we're going in from here. Seconds count. Follow us.
They'd be approaching the ranch house from the side, not the back, as planned. Anya figured out a plan. They could bring flanking fire on the dogs shooting from outside the house, but the quartet of old Indian lawmen who had hidden themselves out in the tall grass had that covered. They could continue to work their way around to come in from the west as planned. But aside from the fact that would take them through the fields of fire of Johnny's bunch, if any were still firing, that would take a long time. And it wasn't just the FBI kill team coming closer with every sweep of their chopper's main rotors. The longer this went on, the greater the likelihood the dogs would kill Sally, or even that a stray bullet from her rescuers would do the job. There were no good answers, so Anya opted for the quickest. She jumped up and charged the house. Speed was everything. There was a window in the wall that faced them. Anya saw the curtains twitch. Then glass exploded outward as full auto fire erupted through the window. A second burst blew curtain tatters flapping out the window. Cody grunted and fell headlong to the dirt. His limbs flopped as he rolled. Ahead, Anya had only just spotted fell away inside the window. Snake had paused just long enough to take quick aim before firing her shotgun. Anya scattered shots through the windows to keep the defenders' heads down. Shooting blind might endanger Sally. But if somebody picked her, Snake, and Billy off as they covered the last few yards to the house, she was likely dead anyway. Half-turning, Anya pressed up hard against the wall between the window and the back of the house. Snake slammed up beside her. A moment later, Billy ran past them, his short, bowed legs pumping determinedly, if not exactly fast. He rumbled right past the women, heading for the back door. Bending low to avoid being spotted out the kitchen window, Anya followed. She felt, more than heard, Snake come after. Holding his carbine across his chest, Billy kicked at the back door. His boot rebounded.
Damn!
Anya slid up to the side of the frame. Keeping the foot-thick wall at her back, she grabbed the knob and turned. The door opened, and Billy kicked it again. Then Billy's .44 Magnum roared. Snake slipped inside. Anya joined her in the kitchen. She stepped left automatically to clear the doorway's fatal funnel.
Missed!
Snake racked her slide. She had shifted right on entering. Snake unleashed another blast into the far wall, hoping to blow through and nail the dog who'd peeked out and then ducked to cover on the far side. But instead of lath and plaster or drywall, the interior wall turned out to be adobe. Like the outer walls, it would shrug off hits all day. Anya slipped forward around a wooden kitchen table set against the wall. A man lay on his back in the middle of the floor, with his arms raised over his head and a pair of eagle feathers splayed out on the warped floorboards. He had obviously taken Billy's bullet through the chest. Anya's head reeled. She put out an arm to steady herself against the nearest wall. Anya wasn't squeamish. She wondered what would be making her feel so shaky. Snake fired another shot through the open doorway that led past the hall to the living room. Anya guessed it was to make the man who'd escaped her earlier keep his head down. Anya dropped the Mini-14's magazine from the well and stuffed it in her jacket pocket. Then she jacked the action and caught the brass cartridge as it spun glittering from the receiver. She dropped that in a pants pocket. Kneeling, she set the unloaded Mini-14 down on the floor. Short and handy though it was, a handgun was even more effective in close quarters, and she was a lot more used to fighting at face-to-face range. From the front of the house, voices barked questions at each other from the living room on down the hallway that led right to where the bedrooms and bathroom presumably lay. Sally was almost certainly in one of the rooms down the hall.
Cover my back from the dudes in the hall.
A shot erupted from the corridor as she raced past. Anya burst into the living room, her sword appearing in her free hand. The two crazy dogs, kneeling by the windows to either side of the door, tried to swing their long black rifles Anya's way. They were too late. With a compact swing and thrust, Anya slashed the throat of one and disemboweled the other. As her victims fell, Anya heard Snake's shotgun blast, followed by two .44 Magnum carbine blasts from Billy's rifle. Anya returned the sword to the other wearer. Then Snake stood beside Anya. She held her shotgun, muzzle up. Her usually narrow eyes were wide.
Clear.
Snake nodded.
Ready? Oh, yeah. Billy?
Here.
Billy knelt on the kitchen side of the hallway, leaning his bulky body out far enough to cover down it.
Gotcha. Bastard stuck his head out from the bedroom down the hall.
Right. Sally will be at the rear of the house. Take the first door. We cover.
She glanced back at Snake.
Then we hit the next one.
Snake's thin lips curved in a slight, feral smile. She nodded. Anya moved to the opening to the hallway, standing far enough inside the living room to remain invisible from the hall.
On one.
She flashed two fingers to Billy. He grinned.
Two.
Billy launched himself on the second count. He caromed off the corridor's far wall to kick in the first door on the right. Anya hit the rear corridor wall. The shotgun echo told her Billy just cleared the bathroom. Snake knelt by the front wall of the hallway, aiming down the passage. Billy erupted out of the bathroom and hit the closed door across the hallway with his shoulder. He fired through the gap, then, dropping the carbine, plucked his one-piece steel hatchet from his belt.
Hello, boys!
Billy vanished inside. Anya and Snake dashed down the hall. A man lay slumped in the door of the far bedroom. The back of his head was
missing. The
right-hand door was closed. Anya stopped, just shy of the open door, and leaned forward over the body, covering the room with the fat white dot painted on her front sight. Nobody. If somebody was lurking out of her field of view on that quick peek, she'd just have to risk it. They were out of time. Sally had to be behind the last door, if she was there at all. She flattened herself as best she could. Then she caught Snake's eye, where the woman stood posed on the door's far side. Snake went to one knee. Luck, or her subconscious, had set them up perfectly. Anya was right-handed, and Snake shot lefty. Anya reached down and carefully turned the knob. Then she yanked back her hand. Anya grabbed the knob again, twisted, and threw the door open. There were two of them, crouched by the back wall. Their M4s lay on the bare pine planks before them, with charging handles locked back, empty. Their eyes gleamed crazily from faces painted black from cheeks to hairline. One crazy dog held Sally Ten Bears pinned between them by the blade of a huge Bowie knife to her throat. The other pressed a 9mm pistol to the side of her pigtailed head.
Back off! We'll kill the little girl!
Anya cut her eyes to Snake. The other woman caught her look. She nodded once, barely perceptibly. Both dog soldiers fell as one. Each sported a hole dead between staring, empty eyes. Sally flung herself forward and caught Anya in a ferocious embrace. Anya hugged her briefly, keeping her pistol tipped toward the ceiling so as not to endanger any of her friends.
Your mom is fine. Your dad and brother are outside. We need to get you out of here. Let's go out the back door.
No!
Sally ripped herself free. Her face was suffused with blood and twisted in panic.
We can't!
Why not?
Snake hunkered down so as not to loom above the terrified child. She kept switching her eyes from rear window to hallway door, taking nothing for granted.
There's something out there. A monster. Even the bad guys are scared of it. They told me it would rip me apart if I ran away. They showed me pictures of all these torn up dead people.
A skinwalker.
Billy stood in the hallway behind the women. He had sheathed his hatchet at his belt and picked up his gun.
She's probably safest staying put then. Sally, go in the bathroom. Will you do that for me, honey, please? Lie down in the bathtub. That'll keep you safe from bullets.
Unless the FBI sprays the house with bullets from a helicopter overhead, she thought. The clock was running out, and on top of everything else, the Navajo wolf was apparently somewhere on the scene.
But I want to watch!
Please, do it for your mom and dad and Johnny. If you get hurt, they'll never forgive themselves, ever. Understand?
For a moment, the girl looked mulish. The stubborn family temperament bred true, it seemed. Then she nodded.
All right.
She went into the bathroom and closed the door behind her. Through what little was left of it, Anya saw her climb into the bathtub, cross her arms, and pout.
Good enough.
Having seen something curious when she checked the bedroom across the hall, Anya ducked down below window level and went inside. Sure enough, computers and flat-screen monitors were set on a wooden desk and a card table.
Damn, they really did watch us the whole time. Wouldn't they have to task a satellite especially for it? There's way more surveillance-capable satellites over our heads than most people realize. This might not even be from an American bird. Could be a real-time feed purchased from anybody. Even Russians or Chinese. Your tax dollars at work.
Staying low, they moved to the window and peered out.
Oh no.
What's the matter?
Billy hunkered down behind them. The shooting was picking up outside.
The dogs have come out from undercover. Signifying what?
Anya gave her a worried look.
Maybe some of our snipers have been taken out by the skinwalker.
Damn!
And no way to warn the others.
Billy laid two fingers on Anya's shoulder and pointed.
Look!
Johnny Ten Bears emerged from the tall grass on the north side of the road that led to the derelict Otero house. He was walking bent over and holding his Glock ready in his hand. From beyond the garage, Georgia Bell suddenly rushed him. The crazy dog wore fringed buckskin pants. His broad, flabby torso was bare from the waist up. In classic Comanche fashion, his hair was divided in two large braids. A narrow scalp lock streamed behind him like a cavalry pennon. He caught the unsuspecting Johnny from behind and slammed him to the ground. As if the participants were stopping to watch, the gunfire slackened.
I got you now, punk! You never could beat me! And you never will!
Straddling Johnny's back, he grabbed handfuls of his long black hair and started pounding his face into the hard-packed ground. Anya raised her carbine and lined the front sight post on Abel's head.
No.
Billy pushed the weapon gently offline.
You don't know Johnny the way we do. He needs this. Live or die.
So what if he does die?
If Georgie wins, then we kill him. Deal.
Johnny Ten Bears got an arm under himself and pushed upward. So focused was his opponent on hammering the ground with Johnny's face, he'd risen up on his legs for better leverage. Johnny's hips were no longer pinned by Abel's great weight. The Iron Horse War Chief half rolled onto his left side and scissored his right thigh up into Abel's crotch. From 60 yards away, Anya saw the strike lift the bigger man. His grip loosened on Johnny's long black hair. Johnny threw him off and came up to one knee with a fist on the ground.
Didn't think that crotch shot would do much to Georgie. Not much by way of a target.
Abel recovered quickly. He was up almost at once, charging his kneeling foe like an angry rhino. To Anya's surprise, Johnny launched himself not backward or away, but forward. He rolled right into Abel's shins. The rogue SIU chief was even more surprised than Anya. He took a header over his opponent and landed heavily on his face.
Whoa! That registered on the Richter scale!
Abel got right back up, only a lot more slowly. Too slowly. Johnny popped upright and skip-stepped toward him. As Abel reared up on his knees, Johnny caught him in the left side of the face with a beautiful roundhouse kick that snapped his opponent's head around. Anya winced. She had distinctly heard the blow land. Only the bear-like thickness of Abel's neck saved him from having it broken by that kick. Abel toppled backward. Johnny danced in with his knees still raised like a kickboxer. Abel lashed out with a leg in an attempt to sweep Johnny's limb from beneath him. But Johnny wasn't caught out. One-legged, he hopped straight in the air. Abel's short but massive leg passed harmlessly beneath. When he landed, Johnny used the momentum gravity gave him to stomp Abel in the side of his big jiggling paunch. Far from being stunned by what had to be a painful hit, he lunged for Johnny. Johnny had to leap back so fast he almost overbalanced and went over backward. As Johnny caught himself, Abel got back to his feet. He raised half-furled fists by his face. The left side was swelling, the eye reddened and half-closed. Deliberately, Abel advanced on his foe.
Dad's watching.
Unwilling as she was to look away from the bare-hand duel for even an instant, Anya moved her gaze left. Tom Ten Bears stood watching his son battle for his life from 20 yards away. Out of his Oklahoma Highway Patrol uniform, he looked vulnerable. His big hands were empty, but Anya noticed his .41 Magnum still rode in its holster at his right hip. She'd bet the safety strap was unsnapped. Snake nudged her with surprising gentleness. Anya looked to her. She nodded off to the right. Anya saw a dog soldier, shirtless like his leader, who had emerged from cover and was hunkered down, peering around a corner of the shed at the deathmatch. He was mostly hidden from view from the combatant's direction, but plainly in sight of the house. It suddenly struck Anya that, as far as he knew, he was still safe in the hands of his revolutionary martyr wannabe comrades. A quick check around showed at least two more surviving dog riflemen, like the first, concealed, if not covered, from Johnny and his friends to the west, and in easy view of Anya, Snake, and Billy. Anya grinned briefly. She wasn't worried about notions of fair play. Not with violent criminals who had committed mass murder, attacked an innocent woman, and kidnapped her even more blameless child. Besides, Anya knew perfectly well the crazy dogs were only taking a quick time out from trying to kill her and her friends. They had less sense of fair play than she did. They just wanted to watch a good fight. So did Anya. She enjoyed a battle between experts. For all his bulk and general loathsomeness, Abel was very good. And so was Johnny Ten Bears. He and his foe traded jabs, ranging shots that had no visible effect. Johnny tried a feint wheel kick at head level in Abel's face, just to let him know he had it in his arsenal. It was risky kicking above the waist in a real fight, but if you were good enough, you could get away with it sometimes. as Anya had herself in her time. A bell rocked Johnny Ten Bear's head back with a lead left that seemed too powerful to call a stiff jab, though technically it was. A bell had a weightlifter's arm strength and the technique to step into the punch. Nailed squarely in the face, Johnny staggered. Showing true killer instinct, Abel closed with his stunned foe. He pistoned short but monstrously powerful hooks and crosses into Johnny's short ribs. Abel brought up the point of his left elbow in a rising smash that caught Johnny right under the point of the chin. The taller, lighter man reeled backward. With a roar of triumph, Abel rushed forward and seized him around the middle in a bear hug. Johnny called out in pain as Abel locked hand on wrist behind his back and brought down crushing pressure on his bruised and cracked ribcage. Triumphantly, George Abel hoisted his imprisoned foe into the air. Abel had allowed his overconfidence to run away with him. In his eagerness to crush his hated rival, he'd left Johnny Ten Bear's arms free. But then, without raising his lolling head, Johnny clapped his hands sharply over Abel's ears, imploding the dog soldier's eardrums. Johnny jackknifed forward and smashed George Abel's nose with a headbutt. George Abel dropped Johnny and staggered back as his free-flowing blood painted a mustache and beard of red down his lips and chin. Johnny's knees buckled as his feet hit the ground. He had barely lurched back to his feet when Abel put his head down and charged. He rammed the point of his skull into Johnny's stomach. But Johnny Ten Bears bent forward to meet the flesh-and-bone battering ram. His right arm encircled Abel's throat, slipping just beneath his powerful chin. Johnny did a front roll right over the top of Abel's vast back. Neck broken, Abel's dead weight dropped to the ground. Johnny Ten Bears on top. The victor lay unmoving. The first crazy dog Anya noticed, the one crouching behind the shed, raised his M4. Anya already had her Mini 14 shouldered. The carbine had little kick. It came back online so fast she was able to double-tap her foe as if it were a handgun. He was already slumping toward the dirt. The second shot hit him in the back of the neck.
No, you don't!
Another dog went down as he tried to draw a bead on the Iron Horse Chieftain, who was feebly struggling to move off his enemy's dead buffalo bulk. Tracking her carbine left, looking for other targets, Anya saw Tom Ten Bear's quick draw his big-framed Smith & Wesson. Another crazy dog, wishing to die, fell forward into sight from beyond the garage, an M16 falling from his hands. He'd gotten his wish. Like a sudden rain squall, gunfire broke loose again. Another shirtless, gaudily painted crazy dog raced madly around the rear of the maroon SUV with a short M4 carbine in one pistoning hand. Black holes appeared on his bare chest, and red mist puffed out ahead of him as at least two bullets holed him back to front. He fell and slid 5 feet on his face and didn't move again.
I guess not all the bros and sisters were watching the fight.
Snake had an M16 recovered from the dead guy in the doorway up and was squeezing off aimed single shots at a target no one could see. Abruptly, the shooting stopped. No targets presented themselves to the trio crouched in the front bedroom command post. It seemed that the other surviving horses had run out of bad guys to shoot at, too.
I guess we won.
Snake did not raise her eye from her rifle's battle sights.
Maybe so.
Tom Ten Bears knelt by Johnny's side. During the resurgent firefight, he helped his savagely battered son work his way clear of George Abel's corpse. Johnny promptly collapsed on his back. Another motion drew Anya's eye outward to her left. Angel was kneeling in the grass, cradling something in her lap. Her head was tipped forward, her long black hair hanging to obscure her beautiful face. The shaking of her shoulders and the outsized leather jacket told Anya all she needed to know and more than she cared to. The young ex-attorney was cradling the head of her dead fiancé, Ricky, in her lap. The wind shifted to blow straight from the west, in through the window of the bedroom. Though it was tainted with burned propellants and lubricants, and more organic smells, it still tasted fresh after the more concentrated gun smoke and spilled blood smells in the room. Its chill seemed to cleanse Anya's nostrils, throat, and lungs, and acted like a dash of icy water on the face. Yet at the same time, she felt an increased sense of the lightheadedness from before. Anya breathed deep. Shaking her head and blinking back tears, Anya pushed away from the window. She stayed hunched over. No point standing bolt upright and giving some bitter end or crazy dog a free shot at her from hiding.
I'm gonna go check on Sally.
Then she turned and froze. Sally stood in the bedroom doorway. Her eyes were huge.
Sally, it's not safe yet. You need to stay in the bathroom.
But I heard shooting! Where's Johnny? Where's Daddy?
They're fine, sweetie. We're almost through this, but not yet. We...
Anya!
Anya ran forward 2 steps to grab and hug the gangly girl against her. Blocking the child's view of the window with her body, Anya looked back over her shoulder. Like a great gray dog, it bounded from the yellow grass. It covered ground with such amazing speed that it looked like a blur. In fact, its outline seemed somehow to shift as it streaked toward the ranch house. Holding his revolver in both hands, Tom Ten Bears rose from his son's side and stepped quickly into the gray shape's path. The shots had no effect. The beast reared up. Now it seemed to be a man with the head of a wolf. It struck Tom with its claws, driving him back. The highway patrol lieutenant fell, blood spurting from a ripped-out throat. Johnny flung himself at the monster. Ignoring him, it leaped over his supine father and raced on, intent on the house. Johnny collapsed in the dirt as his strength failed him.
Oh, shit!
Billy turned for the door as Snake fired the M16 at the creature. Outside, the surviving horses and what Anya thought were at least 2 of the old boy snipers were firing furiously. They must be dumping boxes of bullets into the thing, yet its step never faltered.
What? What's going on?
Anya yanked her back against the far wall of the hallway as Billy churned past on his short legs. Snake followed right behind him. Anya still had her Mini-14 in her right hand.
Let me go!
Sally broke free and tried to run past Anya to the window. Frantically, Anya clutched at her arm.
Ugh, for God's sake, get in here and stay back!
Anya thrust the child into the bathroom and raced down the short hallway. From the living room came the thunder of Billy's lever-action carbine, cranking out shots. Somehow she knew it wouldn't be enough. Anya reached the end of the hall in time to see the burly Billy grappling with the gray-furred shape. The monster cast the torn body away like a rag doll. For a moment, it stood on its hind legs. The creature seemed to fill the doorway with its black presence. Its outline still seemed to shimmer, as if Anya, not 20 feet away, was seeing it through a haze of midsummer heat. Smoke curled from the barrel of Snake's 20-gauge pump gun. The shadow shape flinched back. Then it sprang at her. The beast lashed out with its right arm. Black talons gashed open Snake's left side. The beast flung her clear across the living room. Snake slammed against a huge fieldstone fireplace. Her head slammed back into the slate mantle and she slumped, the shotgun dropping from limp fingers. Now it was Anya's turn to face the horror. She had the Mini-14 shouldered. The monster of constantly shifting gray shadow filled the space between the steel ears that flanked the front sight post. She saw her bullets hit, saw the fur fluff out where they went home. They had no effect. For a moment, her gaze met eyes that seemed to glow in their own blue witch fire. Anya dashed back to the open bathroom door. Sally stared down at her in horror. She threw a hand toward the child.
Stay! Get back!
On all fours now, its back fur bristling, the shadow monster prowled around the corner. Its tongue lolled over lips that seemed to grin. Triumph glowed in the blue-hot flames of its eyes.
You're enjoying this.
Though bruised and battered, her body feeling as if she had turned to lead and her limbs to string cheese, Anya crouched, her left hand on the floor, while she held her right wardingly toward the beast. It stopped. Its shadow shape contracted as it cocked itself like a spring to strike. Like a living spear of righteousness, Anya Creed flung herself to meet it. The hurtling mass crashed upon Anya and drove her back. Hot, stinking breaths surrounded her head, stinging her skin like acid mist. With the skinwalker lying atop her, Anya slid down the corridor on her back. She felt the monster die. She released the sword. With the last of her resources, Anya half steered the limp body to her left as it fell, half pushed herself out from under it. It landed diagonally across her hips. She didn't lose consciousness then, not quite.
Anya! Anya, are you all right? Oh, please don't be dead!
A child's hands and a child's desperate voice tugged at her, dragging soul back into her body and mind back behind her eyes. She opened them. Sally Ten Bears was holding Anya's right wrist in both little hands and pulling for all she was worth. Then Snake appeared, tugging at the dead thing that lay across Anya, trapping her.
Oh.
Anya, it's okay. I'm here.
When the fearful weight came off her legs, Anya managed to climb to her feet, slowly, and with more help from a young girl than she'd care to admit.
Snake, are you all right?
Nothing that won't heal.
The left side of the Cheyenne woman's black t-shirt was sodden. From the labored whistle of her breath, she had broken ribs, and possibly a raw end threatening to pierce a lung. But she threaded Anya's left arm over her right shoulder as Sally inserted herself under Anya's right arm, bracing her armpit with her shoulder like a living crutch.
Who the hell is that?
Snake nodded at the shape that lay rolled with its back against the hallway wall. Anya looked down. A man lay there, naked but for the tattered head and pelt of a wolf. His pallid skin was punctured by innumerable small round holes that bled a tracery of blood, black in the gloom. He had a bit of whitish stubble on his gaunt cheeks, and his wide-open blue eyes seemed to gaze sightlessly upon their own damnation.
Dr. Yves Michel, the UN guy, the skinwalker expert. I should have known.
The woman and the girl walked Anya out, through the living room and out into the healing sunlight and cleansing wind. Anya made herself look at the torn wreckage of Billy Whitebird's body as they passed. There was something pressing outward from within her, something she must say.
Thank you. The sword. Please, don't tell anyone.
Snake shook her head.
I won't. That's between you and your power. It's not mine to give.
I didn't see anything.
The disparate pair managed to support Anya across the yard and up the road to where Johnny Ten Bears knelt with his father's head cradled on his thighs. The sight of her dad lying there was too much for Sally. She launched herself from beneath Anya's arm and fell across his bloody chest. Snake caught Anya as her knees buckled and kept her from falling, despite the pain it must have cost her. Tom Ten Bears somehow retained the strength to lay an arm across his daughter's heaving back.
Oh, you're all right.
Tom.
My daughter's safe. My son lives. It is a good day.
Johnny raised his face to hers. His lean, bruised cheeks ran with tears.
My father.
Johnny reached down to stroke the back of his sister's head.
I found him. Now I'm losing him.
You're brother. We'll take care of you, Sally. He is a good man. I am proud.
His head lolled to the side, and the life left his eyes. Anya looked up at the great shark shadows that seemed to fill the sky with their rotors sweeping overhead. It was too much. She slipped into darkness. Everybody was arrested. After Anya came to and was herded to join the others sitting under the guns and black-visored gazes of the FBI SWAT unit, Anya learned the day's terrible toll. Of those who'd gone with Anya, Johnny, and Tom on their last ride, only she, Johnny, Snake, Angel, and Lonnie Blackhand survived. Tom had died. Ricky succumbed to his wounds, Angel told her in a lost and quiet voice, while shooting at the charging skinwalker. Angel herself took a shot through the upper arm. The skinwalker also killed two of the Indian vet snipers before he attacked the house. For some odd reason, the media did not arrive before the survivors got shackled and bundled into the vehicles of the Albuquerque convoy that arrived at almost the same instant as the four FBI choppers. It took some soft words from Johnny to get Sally to consent to be detached from his side and escorted into a sedan by a shocked-looking female assistant U.S. attorney. Johnny himself, as well as Snake and Angel, went into ambulances to be taken under guard for treatment at University Hospital. Medics dressed Anya's and Lonnie's wounds on the scene. They weren't serious, and aside from cleaning lacerations and applying some bandages, there wasn't much to be done for them. They consisted mainly of massive, bone-deep bruising, and at least in Anya's case, a crushing sadness compounded of adrenaline letdown, grief, and trepidation for the fates of herself and her friends. When she found herself ushered, not ungently, into a black SUV with dark-tinted windows, the first thing Anya saw was Edgar Martinez grinning at her. Rosendo and Frank were in there with him.
Welcome, fellow jailbirds. We held him as long as we could. Hope it was enough.
You were perfect.
Eventually, they all wound up in the federal courthouse in Albuquerque. There, they were subjected to what would later be termed extensive debriefing. At the time, it seemed to Anya a lot like plain old-fashioned interrogation. It went on for hours at a stretch. The only reason she wasn't subjected to 12-hour sessions was that they just didn't have enough personnel on hand to do that, especially given the gigantic investigation into the Dog Society and their now infamous plot. Instead, between 3 or 4 hour grillings, Anya was left locked in the interrogation rooms to stew. Despite the fact she was deliberately not made comfortable, she mostly slept. They were clearly not happy, the Bureau agents and the U.S. attorneys. An edge actually came into Special Agent in Charge Lamont Young's bland voice as he told Anya in no uncertain terms how disappointed he was in her. Anya had no way of knowing how long they kept her. She didn't wear a watch, and she left all her gear with the Indian good old boys staying behind at the vehicles in what proved the futile hope of avoiding detection by the tech-heavy crazy dogs. The sound of the door opening awakened her. A little trim Latino with a brush of dense, back-swept, steel-colored hair and a handlebar mustache, dressed in an immaculate dark blue suit and a bolo tie, stepped in.
Anya Creed, my name is Reynaldo Montoya. I must say it's an honor and a privilege to meet you.
He had a dark complexion, obviously darkened further by long exposure to the southwestern sun. It lent him craggy gravitas. Notwithstanding his lack of height, he fairly radiated energy and sheer presence.
Oh.
Anya stirred. She had been dead asleep, stacked in a corner with her windbreaker huddled about her. It was colder in the interrogation room than it had been in the derelict ranch house out on the Great Plains.
Thanks, I think. Are you the one playing good cop?
Miss Creed, I assure you, I'm not a cop at all.
He came to her side and helped her up. He got her settled into a metal chair at the obligatory interrogation room table, then looked up at the blatantly obvious camera mounted in a corner of the ceiling.
Get some hot coffee in here for this woman, now!
Montoya sat down across the table from her and smiled.
I'm eager to hear your story, But first, there are some things I must tell you.
Who are you? And, what are you doing here?
Those are as good places to start as any. I am an attorney. I'm retired from paid practice. These days, I devote my time and energy to fighting for the rights of those falsely accused, prosecuted, or convicted. I was a friend of Tom Tenbear's. We met several years ago when he helped play a key role in helping us exonerate a young Acoma Pueblo man falsely charged with rape and murder in Lawton, Oklahoma.
That surprised Anya. She would have thought that good man, though she knew the lieutenant to be, his warrior ethos would dictate his putting cop solidarity above all. Instead, he seemed committed, as she herself was, to justice as an ideal, not another empty promise chiseled into the wall of a government building. She felt shame then at having underestimated the man, in even such a trivial way. It became easier likewise to understand how Johnny had misjudged him. Johnny grew up as the man's son, after all, ensuring that in ways he understood him less than anybody, for reasons of rivalry and adolescent rebellion.
As to what I'm doing here, I am assisting you and your comrades from the incident in Harding County. I might mention I am but one of a human wave of attorneys hurling themselves against the walls of this courthouse, by the way.
Who's paying for all this?
You've dealt with lawyers before, I take it. I donate my efforts. I have done well on investments made during a long and lucrative career, largely by ignoring the advice of pundits and advisors. As for the rest, some are likewise donating their time, as friends of Tom Tenbear's or simply of justice. And others constitute part of the truly imposing amount of pressure being applied to the Federal Bureau of Investigation and the U.S. Attorney's Office by the Oklahoma and New Mexico state governments, as well as half a dozen Indian tribes, to let you all go.
Is there really even a chance of that?
Oh, yes, Miss Creed. What I might term a very good chance, if you agree to certain terms, which I admit you might find unpalatable.
Winding up in a federal penitentiary for the rest of my life would be pretty unpalatable, Mr. Montoya. But I have to warn you, I'm not going to sell my friends for my freedom.
Fortunately, I don't believe it will come to that. Not if you agree to the terms I am about to convey to you. If not, then you may find yourself faced with such a dilemma.
What's the deal?
Once law enforcement got their jaws in you, she had observed, they tended not to let go until they could shake you into pleading guilty to something.
The Bureau and the Department of Justice find themselves in a most uncomfortable position. To be perfectly blunt, stumbling late onto a slaughter of unquestionable criminals does not provide nearly the media extravaganza as actually slaughtering the aforementioned criminals in a shootout, broadcast throughout the world in real time. Especially since the media, contrary to the evident expectations of Special Agent in Charge Lamont Young, who commanded the operation, never showed up until well after the action ended and you and your associates were on your way here.
Yeah, that puzzled me too. Especially since we heard before we went in that the FBI had leaked the operation to the media, and the U.S. Attorney's Office, here I guess, was hoping to avert a massacre that would play into the crazy dog's hands. We had contacts of our own in law enforcement, you see.
Oh, yes.
His dark eyes twinkled as he nodded.
I know that very well, believe me. It turns out that Tom's network has its tentacles in lots of unexpected places. A benefit of a culture that emphasizes strong bonds across extended families, I believe. It would appear that the media experienced certain technical difficulties, including being mysteriously directed to their wrong location.
It felt good to laugh, even if it made her feel as if she was being speared through the lungs.
So here's what we find. 15 more dead terrorists, 9 dead civilians, a delightful and highly photogenic young Native American girl hostage released unharmed, and not a federal agent in sight until it was all over.
And us, no doubt, facing a really remarkable array of federal charges.
Well, therein lies the rub. Technically, no doubt, laws were broken. Bent, at the very least. Now, imagine, please, presenting defendants to a jury on the basis of crimes committed while combating terrorism, at substantial risk and cost to themselves and their accomplices, defeating those terrorists and returning young Alessandra Tenbears safely to her mother. And you, as a prosecuting attorney, are asking these 12 good Americans to send those defendants to prison. Would you want to be that prosecutor, Miss Creed?
Anya thought about it.
Ooh, I don't think so.
Indeed not. It's a truism that jury behavior is unpredictable, and I dare say their reaction would be unpredictable. For example, would they settle simply for acquitting on all charges after seconds of deliberation? Or would they physically chase the U.S. attorney out of the courtroom in an attempt to lynch him or her?
Well,
the crazy dogs who got their wishes to die did a remarkably comprehensive job of fouling their own den. Some of them were rogue law enforcement officers, members in full standing of the National Security Network, who themselves perpetrated some of the most heinous acts of domestic terrorism in America's history, and who came within a hair of taking top place, almost within sight of the scene of the Oklahoma City bombing. There's no better way to forfeit the sympathies of an American public who, for better or worse, tend to harbor strong prejudices in favor of the police. Surviving members of the group have admitted to engaging in the abduction, torture, and murder of various important personages within the Comanche Nation, not to mention a young female reporter and her African-American cameraman, which hasn't endeared them to the Numanu people, nor Oklahomans in general. They have even been accused of luring in a number of noted radicals, black, Latino, and anti-globalist activists wanted for a whole spectrum of terrorist acts themselves, and murdering them in some abandoned training facility outside Lawton. That's turned the left and the radical community against them. At this point, the Dog Society could probably improve its image by enlisting Osama bin Laden.
I see. But what exactly are you offering me, Mr. Montoya?
The same thing all your associates are being offered. That includes the members of the Iron Horse People Motorcycle Club, as well as a number of acquaintances of the late and, might I add, highly decorated and widely respected Oklahoma Highway Patrol officer and homicide investigator Thomas Tenbears.
All right. I'm listening.
You sign an agreement jointly presented by the Justice Department and the Department of Homeland Security, undertaking never to speak publicly or privately about the events of the past few days, or indeed anything concerning your interactions with the Dog Society, the late Dr. Michelle, and the kidnapping and rescue of Sally Tenbears. Should you all agree to and sign this document, the events will then be classified as secrets vital to national security. If, subsequently, you do speak of it, you will vanish from the face of the earth instantaneously. I cannot sufficiently emphasize that regardless of the legalities involved, that will happen.
I believe it. But what do we get?
Agreement not to prosecute you or your friends for any acts in any way connected with the events. Any acts in any way connected. And please, believe me, Miss Creed, when I tell you that this is not an empty promise nor a trick, the way so many plea deals offered to accused persons turn out to be. Notwithstanding the enormous public and official support you and your associates enjoy, the blunt truth is that if the Bureau had not determined that this course was in its own best interests, it would never have been assented.
But that's a cover-up. A cover-up of massive proportions.
Yes, to the first. The second, not so much.
Anya frowned and shook her head.
From what I have been able to learn about you, Miss Creed, and I am thoroughly impressed by it, you are far too intelligent a human being to be surprised by that.
Well, I can't argue with you in this case.
She sat for a moment without speaking. She would have liked to be able to say she was mulling his proposal over. The truth was, she was nodding off to sleep. She caught herself as her chin dropped toward her clavicle.
I suppose this includes anything pertaining to the Skinwalker? To Dr. Michelle?
Yes.
Doug Morrell will digest the lining of his own stomach. He's my producer on Chasing History's Monsters. But he can deal. Do you happen to know what's been learned about him, by the way? Dr. Michelle, not Doug.
I can tell you as much as will eventually be released to the media by the Bureau. It seems that agents have gotten their hands on Dr. Michelle's journals. He describes everything in what I am told is blood-chilling detail. His sympathy for the plight of Native Americans, his hatred of U.S. cultural imperialism within its own borders as well as abroad, his growing fascination with the Navajo wolf-life way, plus the horrid rituals involving much torture, rape, and murder, whereby he made himself a witch and skinwalker.
Montoya shook his head.
He seems to have come to believe that a sufficient amount of killing would make him immortal.
From the amount of gunfire he took before he went down, it almost seems he was onto something.
The chief medical examiner who examined his body made a similar comment off the record, I'm given to understand. Here's an interesting detail. It turns out Dr. Michel was a veteran of the French paratroops with a certain amount of combat experience, largely in Africa. He only entered medical school after his discharge. He was a skilled martial artist and a fitness fanatic.
That would explain some of his strength and speed, but not all of it.
Anya shook her head to clear from behind her eyes the vision of slavering, wide-open jaws with nothing remotely human about them, and those blue, self-luminous eyes.
The FBI claims the madman used a classified hallucinogenic military gas, akin to BZ, an agent whose use this country abandoned years ago. He would open canisters upwind or throw grenades loaded with the gas to put his victims in a mild hallucinatory state, one in which they might be receptive to perceiving him as a man-wolf or an actual wolf.
Huh.
That struck her as far-fetched, yet she couldn't help recalling the recurrent sense of wooziness and lightheadedness she experienced near and inside the derelict ranch house. And really, is it nearly as far-fetched as the alternative, she asked herself? Like, he really was a werewolf?
Agents say they shot a large, if scruffy, wolf-dog hybrid near the ranch house. They had the impression it had been following Michel. He had attacked as technicians were removing the body. They theorize he must have trained the animal to help in his murders.
Montoya leaned back, clasping his hands and tapping the tips of his forefingers together.
There remain a number of loose ends that I admit puzzle me. For instance, all the wounds inflicted by the skinwalker were consistent with canid teeth and natural claws, not just some. The late Dr. Michel displayed a fortitude worthy of Rasputin simply to survive as long as he did, much less inflict such frightful wounds as the ones he did on Mr. Whitebird in that condition. Even extreme fitness and berserk fury can only account for so much. And Mr. Whitebird's knife, with which you claim to have finally dispatched the murderer, a feat of truly epic courage, I have to say, Miss Creed, fails to match the wound that took his life. But these ends, I fear, must remain forever loose. They are the very sort of thing the Bureau has agreed it would be in the national interest to just forget about. If you sign the agreement, that is. Will you?
Answer me one thing, if you will, Mr. Montoya.
If it lies in my power and will not subject me to extraordinary rendition, of course.
Just how on earth can they possibly explain all this away?
Montoya smiled.
The federal government employs a good many public relations professionals tasked to provide such explanations, Miss Creed. Believe me, they have most extensive experience.
The wind was rising as Anya walked out of a northern exit of the federal courthouse. Its cool caress was welcome on her face, and it felt good as she filled her lungs with it. It even smelled good to her, full as it was with the fumes of just-past rush-hour exhausts, because it smelled of freedom.
I didn't know if I'd ever breathe free air again.
With the muted growl of a powerful V-twin engine, a big Indian motorcycle prowled around the corner of 3rd Street onto Marble, the back street onto which Anya had emerged. The sun, swelling and reddening as it sank behind the skyline of Albuquerque's modest downtown, gave glowing life to its red and cream paint job. The motorcycle pulled to a stop at the curb in front of Anya. Illegally, on the wrong side of the street, right behind the federal courthouse, of course. Johnny Ten Bears turned to look at Anya. Bending his head forward, he pushed a pair of sunglasses down the narrow bridge of his nose.
They just cutting you loose?
You mean they let you go before me?
He shrugged. He wore a black leather jacket over his colors, she saw.
Hey, you're the famous media personality. You're a lot bigger threat to the FBI's rep than some engine scooter trash outlaw like me.
You have an inflated estimate of my importance.
Not for my family and me. Either my blood family or the Iron Horse people.
Thanks. And thank you for your help with everything.
He looked at her. She looked at him. The sun continued to set.
Why not climb on?
What happens then?
We ride away and live happily ever after.
Oh, you think things can possibly go that simply for either one of us?
Hell no. But a body can always hope. So how about it, Anya? Climb on behind me?
Thanks.
Anya slowly shook her head.
But I think not. I guess I'm not the kind to ride behind anyone.
He sighed and slumped slightly. George Abel had given him a far more brutal battering than the false werewolf had given her. Yet he wore his hurts, physical and spiritual, even more lightly than she did, even though she knew how deeply he grieved for his lost brothers and sisters, and for his father, lost, regained, and lost again.
You're right, I guess. Problem is, we're both pretty dominant-type personalities, no?
Yes.
Anya slumped with relief so dangerously that she had to snap herself back upright, almost to attention. One way or another, she was going to collapse soon. She'd rather do it in the hotel room bed the U.S. government was buying her for the night than on the sidewalk outside the federal courthouse.
It'd be great at first, I know that. But give us a few weeks.
Yes, we'd be all up in each other's faces.
6 months for sure.
If that.
Scrapping.
Fighting.
Arguing about nothing.
Right.
You know how it goes.
Afraid that I do.
So.
Someone walked past Anya with long, confident strides. Mostly stifling an urge to jump, Anya looked around to see Snake heading toward Johnny and his vintage ride. The side of her exotically beautiful face was a big green bruise. Her colors were bulked out by the inflatable body cast that stabilized her broken ribs. Her left arm rode in a camouflage sling. Heaven knew how she'd gotten a hold of that. The skinwalker's assault had broken her ulna. At the curb, she stopped and looked back.
You're pretty good for a white girl, Creed. But one day you have to learn. Sometimes even a warrior woman's gotta know when to ride behind her man.
She swung aboard the bike behind Johnny. She carefully wound her arms around his own bruised and battered torso. Johnny shrugged.
Happy trails, Anya.
She raised a hand.
Bye.
Johnny and his warrior woman rode off into the wilds of downtown Albuquerque and the red eye of the setting sun. Anya, bemused, stood alone again.
Rogue Angel Tribal Ways is a graphic audio production. Rogue Angel trademark owned by Harlequin Enterprises Limited, used by others under license. Copyright 2010, Worldwide Library. Production copyright 2011, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Nanette Savard, Colleen Delaney, Thomas Penny, Jeff Allen, Thomas Keegan, Lily Beacon, Yasmin Twazon, Tony Nam, Joseph Thornhill, Kimberly Gilbert, Michael Glenn, M.B. Van Dorn, James Konacek, Greg Gorton, Michael John Casey, Stephen Carpenter, Mort Shelby, Richard Rowan, James Lewis, Eric Messner, Elizabeth Demery, Johan Detweiler, Dolores King-Williams, Scott McCormick, Ken Jackson, and Terrence Aselford. Directed by Ken Jackson. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Allison Thomas and Patrick Stratton. The Rogue Angel theme was composed by Chris Rowan. Book adapted for graphic audio by Wilson T. Ferrier. If you enjoyed Rogue Angel, be sure to look for Elizabeth Moon's The Serrano Legacy series and Vada's War. Available at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net.
Available now in graphic audio.
Graphic audio presents Vampire Earth.
Val, you're free to ask Peter here whatever you like. We don't know much about this. We're holding nothing back.
You think I'm on an assignment?
We know you work with cover stories and so on.
No, it's what I told you. I'm inquiring for a friend, a fellow officer, William Post. This isn't prep for an operation, not by a long shot.
It's just that the mule list is a bit of a mystery to us, too. We thought that maybe someone was finally looking into it.
Mule list?
Mule list is a term we use because all these women appear to carry something the Kurians are interested in. We know it's not blood type or anything obvious, like Downs. About all we know is that only women are tested and that if they come up positive for it, they're immediately packed up and shipped off.
Okay, Jackson Fu. I give up. You win. What do you want? What did I ever do to you?
No, this is purely professional. I need to know about a certain train.
I deal with dozens of trains a week, man. How am I supposed to...
Listen to the question. A train. A special train. Not deposits. All women on board, routed through Memphis. Some sort of medical test selected them. Maybe joining with similar trains?
I don't know anything about a train like that. Let me go, and I'll find out for you.
Looks like you girls are gonna get to watch after all. Bring it in, Smokey.
What's that?
A big bull grog rooster. You better dig deep in your memory before our bully boy gets deep into you, rooster.
You can't mean... Oh, no.
He thinks you're a female in estrus, rooster.
Holy shit, that's big! Pimp, my forearm's got nothing on this grog.
Stop him! Stop him!
You're a hard guy to find, Valentine.
Sir, please turn around and put your hands behind you.
What's this about?
You're under arrest for murder.
Murder?
Sorry, Major. Orders.
David, what's going on?
It's gotta be a mistake. Nice scouting.
Hope they don't climb up there.
Plan of nothing. Never been in here to scavenge. I'd be shocked if there wasn't a hole in the roof of most of these places. Valentine, help me hold this. No, the plastic can, they're trying to crawl over. Girl, check the back. There might be a door. Oh, shit.
There's a door, or there isn't. That's the problem.
How many?
How many are there?
Thousands!
Sounds about right.
Vampire Earth, Book 5, Valentine's Exile.
Available now in graphic audio.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.